for that to load, I'd like to say once again, thank you for sticking around till today. And we've heard a lot about all of the different types of violence, and Annie alluded to prevention measures. And so I'd like to speak today about a preventive intervention strategy that has been ongoing for a number of years with many, many positive results for families. So the Surgeon General's report from 2001 stated that the prevalence of self-reported violence among adolescents has remained relatively constant over the past 20 years, but that the rates are still alarmingly high, with approximately 30% of high school seniors reporting having committed a violent act in the past year. What we also know is that the prevalence of violence among females has markedly increased from 1983 to 1998. In 1983, the male-to-female violent incident ratio was 7.4, which decreased to 3.5 by 1998. And if you look further into the statistics, you'll see that the male rates have remained relatively stable. So what this means is that the girls are closing the gap and they are aggressing at higher levels. Research has also shown that high levels of childhood aggression are important predictors of both adolescent and adult aggression, including violent offending. And additional studies have also demonstrated that that early aggressive behavior also impacts and significantly predicts grade retentions, academic outcomes, delinquency, and totally academic failure. So parent training has become a major focus of intervention efforts aimed at preventing or reducing conduct problems, including aggressive behavior, through the reduction of maladaptive parenting behaviors and an increase in the use of positive parenting strategies. So within this, home visiting programs for first-time parents have garnered a lot of attention recently as effective parenting strategies. Whoa, what's happening here? Unless I hit that. And it's been demonstrated that they're most effective when they're implemented early on. So the Nurse Family Partnership is an intensive nurse home visiting program that targets first-time low-income mothers. It begins during pregnancy, and it lasts all the way through the child's second birthday. We have conducted longitudinal follow-ups on mothers and kids at 6 months, 12 and 24 months, as well as 4, 6, 9, 12 years of age, and there currently is a 17-year data collection phase undergoing right now. So if you were here last year, you saw that I presented results that there was a differential impact of this nurse family partnership on physical aggression by gender. And the key thing, the key point that I made during that presentation was that had we solely limited our analyses to looking at intervention by time effects, we would have completely missed the fact that the effect was concentrated among girls for the particular model that we looked at, which was looking at aggression and language development. What we did demonstrate was that the NFP successfully reduced physically aggressive behaviors in girls at age 2, which then allowed an enhanced development of vocabulary at age 6. However, we also demonstrated that by ages 6 and 12, the physical aggression scores between intervention and comparison girls had attenuated and basically were equivalent. So at that point, you know, it was kind of like, okay, well, if that's the case, then what's the point of the intervention if ultimately by age six, the girls have now come back to, you know, aggressing at low levels? And my response to that was, yeah, but if we've now halted that peak value for physical aggression and put these girls on a different developmental trajectory, because we already showed that they've improved their language scores, maybe we've now put them on a totally different path with regards to long-term outcomes. And so at that point, my interest was then extending the studies and looking at academic outcomes. Oops, we went the wrong way. And now looking at academic outcomes, using extending that model, that PATH model, and now looking at academic outcomes at the end of sixth grade. So just a brief overview of the original main study. The mothers were eligible to participate if they were less than 29 weeks pregnant, had no previous live births, no specific chronic illnesses linked to fetal growth retardation or preterm delivery, and then at least two or more of those sociodemographic conditions. And at registration, 92% of the women enrolled were African American, 98% were unmarried, 64% were 18 or younger, and 85% came from households that were at or below the physical, it's got a mind of its own, federal poverty level. For these analyses, only women who had girls, obviously, that were followed postnatally and that we had at school record data on were used. So I have a final sample of 361. Briefly, the home visiting protocols focused on the physical and emotional care of the child, and we also developed an integrated specific curricula that integrated parent-child interaction and facilitated parents' understanding of their child's infants and their cues, so that we enhanced interest in playing with the child, all to foster that emotional and cognitive development. The nurses averaged 7 visits during pregnancy and 26 visits during the postpartum period. So for the PATH model, the key variables were, for physical aggression, there were 3 items from the Achenbach Child Behavior Checklist, and those were physically attacks others, hits others, and gets into many fights. At age 6, our measure of vocabulary was the Peabody Picture Vocabulary Test Revised, and that is used as a screening tool for verbal ability. Higher scores indicate greater language skills, and it's standardized to a mean of 100 and a standard deviation of 15. Our outcome variables were average GPA for math and reading. This is all at 6th grade. The TCAP, which is the statewide achievement test used by Tennessee. The PIAT, reading and math scores. Again, the PIAT is a individually administered normed reference kind of academic achievement test. And then also the LIDAR, International Performance Scale. This is a nonverbal test of intelligence and cognitive ability that can be used all the way from 2 to age 20. So it's great because it eliminates some of the biases that we find in other measures of achievement and intelligence. At age 12, we only administered the sustained attention subscale from this tool. There were several important covariates that I had to include in the model. Household poverty was one. This was the average Z-score of household discretionary income, head of household employment, and percent household density. And that was because there were baseline differences between the comparison and the intervention group on that variable. We also included negative parenting attitudes as measured by the Bavelak Adult Adolescent Parenting Inventory. This instrument measures kind of negative beliefs and attitudes towards parenting, and it's been used as an indicator for those parents that may be at risk of maltreating their children. And the literature has showed that harsh, restrictive parenting has led to aggressive behavior in their kids, so we wanted to control for that when we looked at outcomes. We also included maternal psychological resources, which is the mean Z-score of intelligence, mental health, mastery, and self-efficacy. This was standardized once again to a mean of 100, standard deviation of 10. We did a median split because what we discovered in some previous analyses with the continuous variable is that all of the action occurred in the tails of the distribution. And so when we wanted to look at more complex models and for ease of interpretation of interaction effects, we used that dichotomous variable. We also measured harsh parenting practices as measured by the Rohner Parental Acceptance Rejection Questionnaire, and there's 4 subscales that measure kind of the mother's perception of how she was brought up with regards to her mother's warmth and affection, hostility, aggression, indifference or neglect, and then undifferentiated rejection. Again, those variables have been shown to predict her parenting styles, and we wanted to control for those as well. We got a measure of the home environment through the Caldwell Home Score. We used the total score. That measures the educational and socio-emotional aspects of the home, and we wanted, again, to control for those impacts potentially on academic outcomes. We wanted to control for age 2 kind of vocabulary development, and we didn't have a direct assessment of that. So as a proxy, we used the Bailey MDI, and that has been shown in other research to link directly with direct assessments of vocabulary at that age. And then lastly, to control for school level variables, we were able to get from the Tennessee Department of Education state report card data for all schools that our study children attended. And so there's benchmark scores that just give a proficiency rating for reading and math, actually in science and social studies, for each of those schools. And so I included that just to control for the school level influence on outcomes. So this is what the PATH model looked like in a very simplistic way, let me tell you. And what we did is, because of the skewed distribution for the aggression variable, we took two steps so that we didn't violate any statistical assumptions. First, I ran these tests. All of the hypotheses tests were first evaluated using adjusted standard errors, and the model fit indices were computed using maximum likelihood estimation methods in M+. And then second, I repeated the analysis, and I used bootstrapping bias-corrected estimates, and basically it yielded similar results. So that was just kind of a diagnostic to make sure that we didn't violate any of our statistical assumptions. And then also, following conventions outlined by Klein, Byrne, Brown, and Kudek for assessing the model fit statistics, we used the chi-squared degrees of freedom ratio of less than 2, the comparative fit index and Tucker-Lewis index fit indices at or above 0.90 as our criteria, and also root mean square error of approximation at or below 0.8, and all of the models comfortably exceeded those criteria. And then lastly, the mediation analyses were conducted independently for each of those academic outcomes. Prior to doing that, there are two criteria for doing this examination of mediation. The first is, and these were all suggested by McKinnon and colleagues, and that is that we do the joint test, and what that requires is first that there be a statistically significant path from intervention to the mediator, and then also mediator to outcome. The second is that there should be a statistically significant result of a test that simultaneously takes into account those paths, and that's known as the asymmetric confidence limits test. So we did do those as we ran these analyses. And then lastly, because these were exploratory, and when I calculated study power for the PATH model, it was only 0.64. I'm using 0.10. I'm a stats geek, and I'm not totally wed to that 0.05 as your be-all and end-all for statistical significance, particularly when we're looking at exploratory analyses. So I am going to report anything as 0.10 or less as being statistically significant. So here's the meat of the matter. As you see, for the comparison group, girls, the model of looking at reductions in physical aggression to vocabulary to academic outcomes, that model was not significant. And that is because we did not meet those criterion of having intervention to mediator statistically significant results. But if you look for the nurse-visited females, you can see that we had highly significant results on their average GPAs over math and reading, as well as their standardized achievement test scores. And then we had, at the 0.10 level, significant results on grade retentions and on the lighter sustained attention subscale and the reading component of that PIAT. Now, if you look at the coefficient, the beta coefficient for grade retentions, however, you'll see that that actually indicates that our nurse-visited children had higher grade retentions. When I delved back into the data, and as I looked through some of the anecdotal information that we have, the majority of those grade retentions occurred at kindergarten. And what we discovered is that really this is not a bad thing, because we empowered the mothers to advocate for their children so that when they saw that their kids were struggling, they went to bat for their kids. And if they felt that their child needed that additional year in kindergarten before being moved on, then that's what they advocated for. So what the results of these analyses show is that there is support, that this nurse-family partnership placed these girls on a different developmental trajectory than the comparison group females through that early interruption of physically aggressive behavior. And what we saw and what we demonstrated was that by reducing physical aggression, that led to improvements in language development, which then allowed these girls to go on and obtain significant academic improvement over their comparison group counterparts. And what we do know is academic failure places adolescents at increased risk for future involvement in crime, substance use, delinquency, encounters with the justice system. And now we've shown that possibly the NFP may be a very effective strategy for reducing these later behaviors. There are several limitations, however, to the results. One is that we did use maternal reports to obtain the information on physical aggression at age two. We know that maternal reports of children's behavior can be colored by her own mental health status, particularly depression. Second, we did not have school record data on all of the female subjects. However, I did run analyses that compared the group that we did and did not have school record data on based on a whole host of sociodemographic characteristics, and there were no differences between those groups. As I said earlier, I had marginal study power at only 0.64, and once again, the findings were only limited to the females. So, what we should do in the future is, number one, I'm very interested now that we have received funding and gotten this 17-year follow-up underway in continuing to follow these girls and get information on their academic achievement. I want to go on to look at how many of these girls completed their education. We are also getting information on encounters with the juvenile justice system. So I'd like to look at, and we're getting some self-reported information on their aggressive behaviors, delinquency, and things like that. We need to explore alternative models to look at what's going on with the boys, because the linkage between language and physical aggression did not play out for them. So is there a different model of effect for the nurse-family partnership intervention that is working for the boys that goes above and beyond language development? And then I also want to look at alternative models that add in some other components besides just the language piece, both for boys and for girls. So thank you. I appreciate your attention.
Thank you very much. Our last presenter is Deanna Zachary from Applied Survey Research in Watsonville, California. And the title of her presentation is Telephone Survey Research with Primarily Latino and White Parents, Youth, and Caregivers in Child Protective Services, Revealing Self-Reported Health and Mental Health Challenges, and that substance abuse treatment would have helped the most in preventing entry to Child Protective Services.